Welcome back in as we kick off hour number two of the program.
No way we didn't just get booted from Facebook.
Happened yesterday to somebody.
I think us and somebody else. They just mute it, which is fine. They don't actually stop the broadcast.
All right. That's good.
Bumper music illegal on Facebook. See, do you own this song?
No.
Do you? Facebook?
Pay thousands of dollars a year to...
They probably do.
To play non-feature music.
They could own it. Amazon could have too. Well, until the, the split.
You hate to see it.
That's sorry, right. Jeff. Idiot.
It's my fault. I set up intern Ben for failure there. I should have had the new,
short-sighted him a little bit.
I should have had the new podcast window ready to go, and that one's on me. That one's on me. I'll take that one.
Rebound.
All right. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Austin ready to go. 865-546-8200. We've been talking Vols hoops. What's up, Austin? You're on 3 and out.
Hey, guys. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you to our super intelligent fans like John Tweet, who have explained to us that being ranked number one in January doesn't mean anything. I guess that's why I couldn't find any national championship t-shirts on the internet yesterday. So thanks for clearing that up.
There are a lot of kind of like poo-poovers of the number one rankings. Like, oh, you're excited about this? Ugh. It's like, well, yeah, man.
So,
like, you gotta
so insufferable. Just have some fun. I mean, first of all, if we get to March and we're kind of on the edge of like a number one or a number two seed, I think spending a couple of weeks at number one kind of may be what ends up pushing you over the edge or pushing you in front of someone else. And then also, I mean, we've got a, I think there's a top 10 player out of Atlanta, like a 7-foot kid that's, I think we're kind of in his top three, and they're trying to get him in for the Florida game. And if we're still ranked number one, I mean, I know the Big Ten and ACC are kind of considered the basketball schools. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better environment in college basketball than the Tommy Bowl whenever the Vols are ranked number one and they're hosting Florida.
That's kind of what Rick Barnes was talking about. Like, hey, the end of the season's obviously what matters, but there's a lot of benefits to having the exposure of being the number one team in the country. Makes sense.
Yeah, and and if there's any recruits that, like, one of their major pieces of criteria for choosing a school is being able to go somewhere and win a national championship. I mean, I think you could have said that about Tennessee before being ranked number one, but it just provides, further evidence of that. So, hoping we can hang on for at least a couple of weeks and enjoy this, but I do think it's a big deal for the program and can provide a lot of confidence to the team once we do get to March and saying that hey, you were thought of as the best team in college basketball at one point, regardless of whether we're still ranked there going to the tournament or not.
Yeah, I think it validates all their hard work to this point. I mean, I get it. I mean, there's some truth to the being number one now doesn't really matter. I mean, you want to be number one at the end, but it's not necessarily necessarily out. It's not a negative to be considered the number one team in all of college basketball.
No, not at all. Those
it's
great.
Like you said, like you can lose a game and still get back in it. Yeah, I mean, you can never be ranked number one and win the national title, or you can be ranked number one all year and win a national title. It just feels good to get the recognition and see that number one by Tennessee's name in something.
It's been
a long time.
It was a great point that Austin started with. If the selection committee is debating a number one versus a number two seed for Tennessee at the end, or to be a certain number one over another number one going into the brackets, and Tennessee's been the number one team in the country for a long stretch, and the other team maybe hasn't been there as much, it's at least in the back of this, even if it's not on the committee's official like weighting scale and like criteria or whatever, it's at least something in the back of their mind that goes, people will agree with this decision.
Yeah.
That Tennessee is the better of these two teams.
Which is actually one of, I don't know if you are aware of this, like in decision making, like that's a big one. Like, can I validate this decision? Not necessarily which one do I think is the best, but which one is easier for me to validate to people? Which one would be easier to accept? And if Tennessee's been ranked number one for however many days, weeks, hopefully months. Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier to talk yourself into that one, even as a casual fan. It's like, oh, they've been number one a couple times, that kind of thing. So let's see. Who all has been ranked number one this year? Kentucky, which never should have counted. Obviously Duke, Kansas, Gonzaga.
I thought Kentucky, they were two. I thought Kansas was one.
Yeah. Okay.
And
Kentucky was not.
No, they got two.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought they were preseason number one
Kansas,
at some point. So Kansas, Duke, Gonzaga.
Was Virginia in the AP or not? They were in the coaches, but not AP.
I think just the coaches. So you're one of four number one ranked teams to this point? I'll take that. I'll take that every time. You're in the hunt for a one seed, and you're one of currently four teams who have had the number one ranking? Yeah, I'll take that.
Well, and you have some runway here. You know, like Austin was saying, he hopes they stay there for a couple weeks. I mean, you have some games here that you really should not lose. Now, if they do, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not going to freak out about it. But this is – we talked a lot about how they lost the last time this happened to right. Vanderbilt right out of the gate. Like, they should not lose to Vanderbilt tomorrow night. That should
Correct.
Not happen
Correct.
on any level. And then there's not even a big game or a really tough game coming up in the near future. So they've got that going for them, too. Let's go back to the phone lines and bring on Josh. Josh, you're on three and out.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning, Josh.
Kind of along the lines of what people have said about recruiting and things like that, anyone who's a naysayer about number one being important in the middle of the season, just look at Mississippi State football. If you went and told that fan base right now that them being ranked number one a few years ago had no effect or no importance, then they would just tell you that they're wrong. I mean, look at where that program's been the past few years. I'm sure being that good had played some part in the coaching decision that Florida ended up making. It's just, you know, it's super important. It's not everything. People need to, you know, keep their expectations realistic, but it's most definitely very important for the team and the program and the university in general.
All that's true. I mean, this is – it just shines a light on everything that's good right now at the University of Tennessee. And as Rick Barnes said, like this it's not what matters, but it does matter because of the exposure that it brings your program.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get too cocky about it. You can't act like, you know, now we're definitely here 100%, but this is a big step for sure.
Thanks for the call, Josh. I like the point too that a recruit wants to go to a place where they think they can win a national championship. If Tennessee as the number one team in the country for a bit this season and then gets, I mean, they'll get the type of seed that does win the national championship, even if they don't win it at the end of the year. I mean, hopefully they go deep and they'll show people, which you combine that with all this data, it shows future recruits that, well, maybe it didn't happen in 2019, but it can happen and it can happen yeah. very soon. Yeah. Why don't you come here and be a part of it?
Yeah. No, it's an easy sell for Rick Barnes now. I mean, to say, yeah, look, we got the number one ranked team in the country with a bunch of three-star guys and lower. And with someone like you, Player X, we could take it to the next level. It's an easy sell.
Back to the phone lines. We've got John Tweet.
Couple that with a duffel bag full of cash, and you're golden.
There you go. Tweet, you're on three and out.
Hello.
Hello.
When you can be on Twitter and say something and it enrages people so much that they call a radio show and you mention you by name, I think you're doing it right.
Congrats to you.
John Troll Tweet.
I mean, my God.
Congratulations.
Troll Tweet.
That's pretty good. I don't know if it doesn't matter. I mean, look, if you continue to play good basketball and you win your games out, it'll sort itself out in the end.
Right. I mean, that's ultimately
the
what matters.
Between 1 and 3, I mean, is it, I guess it's that. I mean, there's no trophy for the number one AP ranking at the
nope.
end of the season.
There's not.
I mean,
yeah, there's no regular season championship award. I agree with
right.
you on all that. I just think it's validation
yeah, I mean,
that your team is really good.
I mean, are we that soft? I mean, do you really have to have it?
No.
What Joe Lunardi thinks, or like what Seth Day, or these other guys that have just crapped all over your fan base, you really need their validation? I mean,
I don't know.
The coaches know.
You don't need it, John, but man, it's nice to watch these guys have to turn around and just eat it.
It's
you know?
More fun. It's
like
just
it,
more fun.
That's fair.
It's nice to have to watch Seth Davis, who was tweeting out Cal scores 2 years ago when he was winning some games, and saying, hey, making sure all you Knoxville fans know Konzo Martin won tonight. It's nice to have to see him say, Tennessee's the best basketball team in the country, and I'm not bitter about it at all. Like, I
oh,
like
he won't
that.
Say it.
No,
you
I know.
That.
I know. Yeah. I'm just saying I enjoy watching the Pat 40s, like Dana O'Neill having to come and do the piece on Rick Barnes when she wrote the article that was Tennessee fans get what they deserve.
I mean, why do you put her on campus
I know.
To do that?
Guys, it's Rick Barnes. He's trying to mend fences. He wants everybody to be nice and friends.
Burn them. I'm about burning them. You know what I mean? Like, once you burn it, it's burnt. Like, well, 40, did 40 double down on the race card? Was that?
He did.
That is common.
Yeah. Did he really?
Oh yeah.
Recently?
Did. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah.
He said, oh my God. If you don't get this,
yeah, he doubled.
He basically
down
said,
on
if you don't get this tweet, you don't get this tweet. Basically saying like, hey, I'm trying to tell you that the petition was started because Konzo was African American, and that was the only reason, and that there'd never be a petition to fire Rick Barnes because he's a white dude. That's what he said in the tweet, but he's not man enough to just say it. He hints all around it so that dumb people don't notice what he's saying, but he gets to feel high and mighty and super smart and whatever. It's like, 40, you're completely off track, buddy. The petition was to bring Bruce Pearl back, not to fire Konzo Martin. Those are two separate things, and neither had to do with race.
You don't think if Rick Barnes had just been staying around meandering around that you know, 500 mark, you know what I mean, and it wasn't going anywhere, people wouldn't have called for him?
Did we fire Buzz Peterson because he was white?
Look at Jerry Green.
What is this race? We just want good basketball, and we feel like we've been underserved here for years.
We fired Butch Jones. He was red. I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
And white.
He did get an extra year, though. First of all, we didn't fire Konzo, by the way. He left.
He left. That's true.
He left. Took our plane, recruited, and then left.
I wish we'd have fired white Dave Hart sooner. Can I say that? Is that racist?
He was orange.
Who's Caucasian?
Dave Hart was orange.
Good grief.
He had black shoe polished hair.
If you don't think winning and losing is more important than race, you're the racist, Pat Forty. Give me a freaking break.
And boys, no hard feelings to Austin. I'm just messing with it. I mean, I get it. It's just not the hill I'm going to die on. You know what I mean? If we're 1-3, I mean, to me, they're pretty much interchangeable. If you want to beat your chest about it, I get it. I mean, we've sucked for too long. But to me, this is where this basketball team should be. We should never drop out of the top 3 in the conference and should always never, ever drop out of the top 25 and honestly should be in the top 15. There's too much fan support, too much history. You've got a great arena, great facilities. This is where we should be, as a top 15 basketball team. No excuse not to be here. Y'all be good, boys.
I agree with John.
Thanks for the call.
Maybe not top 15, but
in the thick of it.
You should be good all the time here. Good, not elite, not necessarily in the Final Four.
You should make the tournament every year.
Yeah, like bubble year occasionally, sure, but Tennessee should be a perennial tournament team. The fact that Tennessee cannot be in the top 65 in basketball for stretches is remarkable, because I mean, we're seeing it now, and you've seen it before. Like, when you get the right coach, and I mean, how much do we talk about flipping coaching on this show? Mm-hmm. When you get the right coach who understands the value of what being at Tennessee brings, be it in football, basketball, hell, baseball, like whatever. When you have a coach who can take those assets and point them in a single direction, you have everything you need here to reach a certain level of success in every sport. Basketball, and I agree with John, like, you felt underserved for so long, and you've seen the runs of potential under Bruce. You saw it for a little bit under Jerry Green. He was just kind of a jerk. So obviously back in the Ray Mears days, and now you're seeing it again with Barnes. It's okay to call something out when it's not up to snuff, when it's not up to par. And I think, you know, Konzo Martin, year 3, like, that was pretty much the same team, and they were still on the bubble or out, and then they played their way in. But when you look at, you know, what Rick Barnes has done, he's had less talented players and has now been more successful because he's just a good coach. And, I mean, Konzo Martin's a hell of a guy, but look at Cal. Like, they kind of underachieved, and they're a nightmare now after he left, the same way Tennessee was. And now he's at Missouri. They're not so good. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I just don't think he's an elite coach. I don't know that I'd say Rick Barnes is elite, but he is upper crust of the next tier, if not one of the elite coaches. And now he's got a fan base. He's got financial support. He's got a great staff that are allowing him to do all the things that he's good at. And you're seeing the benefit of it.
Yeah.
You're seeing it all play out.
And the basketball facilities have, they went through a lot of upgrades too over the since between, you know, kind of Pearl and where we are now. Rick Barnes has found something here and created a culture. I don't know. It's almost like his coaching experience has led him to this point where he's been able to build a culture with these players that's just allowing them to thrive, not only as basketball players, but it's, I don't know, he's instilling this work ethic where guys like Admiral Schofield, who, you know, I mean, he's not even an outside shooter when he comes to the program. I mean, not...
He had a decent jumper, but not from three.
But not like this. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. It's, you know, normally a team like this, it's, well, each guy kind of has a deficiency. That's why they weren't a highly touted player. But when you put them all together, we can mask all those deficiencies. These guys are taking a deficiency and just getting rid of it. Like, it used to be that Grant Williams was too short. It doesn't even matter anymore. He just overcomes that. He hits shots all over the place. He hits shots on bigger players. It's not...
Well, like Kyle was like, oh, he's too timid and he's not coordinated enough. And now he's doing like slide steps and shooting on the first touch, right? And he's leading the team in field goal percentage.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, Bone was a guy that could pass and run the offense but couldn't get to the rim and score.
And now he's attacking the rim.
Development. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole different animal. And, I mean, I'm with you. Like, in college athletics, how good you can be, it really goes back to your financial support, your fan support, and how much money can you pump in to an organization, because money leads you to a better coach, money leads you to better facilities, a better coach and better facilities leads you to better players because you can recruit, and better players lead you to more wins, which lead to even better players. And it just you have to somehow snowball that. And you've seen programs get built because they take a shot on a coach that no one – knows is good yet, and they're able to recruit really good players, and you can start there and just win a bunch, and then that adds fans, and then that adds the money, and then the whole thing gets going. Or you can do it the other way, and that's what Tennessee's really done. Tennessee has finally been able to leverage one of the best fan bases in all of college athletics, not just football, and say, hey, when we're good, we're going to be good. And you got a coach who needed to reset.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't great at Texas that back half, but his life experience has led him to this kind of like new – Rick Barnes is a new level in his own coaching development in terms of culture and program building.
Yep.
Like, he's doing something here that not many people have done. I'm not – like you said, I'm not sure if he's an elite coach, like in-game, scheme, all that stuff, but he's definitely – he's kind of like his players. He's gotten so much better as a coach, even in his last kind of late in life. Which you see sometimes, and Tennessee's been the big beneficiary of, and it is going to be fun to watch as the season rolls on. But the number one ranking, you know, it's definitely a good thing, but obviously, as Tweet says, it's not everything.
It was
and
just
those two things can be okay together.
It was just nice, and again, I liked the Konzo Martin hire at the time. I liked the Donnie Tindall hire at the time, but. Did it not just feel different when it was like, Tennessee just got Rick Barnes? You know what I'm saying? Like, they went after...
Worst case scenario, he was going to stabilize the program for a while, and then
right.
You would take another shot.
And a lot
shot.
Of people said that. Like, well, even if he doesn't recruit well and the teams aren't that good, the next guy will be inheriting a much better program. And now here you are. Because Tennessee paid some money. They went out. They got a big name. A guy who has had a bunch of success, who was a name brand in college basketball, who had some ties to the area, and you spent the money and got him. I think Greg Sankey kind of forced a lot of SEC teams to do that. You look at, you know, Ben Howland at Mississippi State, so on and so forth. A lot of schools recently have made some, in my opinion, really good basketball hires. Tennessee was lucky enough to kind of be out in front of that, and they got Rick Barnes. And I think the fit is perfect. I mean, we talk about that all the time
all
in coaching.
Yeah.
The fit, the culture. This is perfect. I'm not saying it's the only one that would have worked. We saw the Bruce stuff work. But something about this team, the attitude of the players, their personality, how hard they work. I think everyone – you know, one of the things you loved about Pat Summitt was in the game, like, she never stopped. She never really smiled. She's always coaching. She's mm-hmm. And that's Rick Barnes. But then as soon as the game's over, all the players are running to hug him and thank him. And – I don't know, man. Like, I hate the word, like, family, but, man, like, just it just feels like it.
When Rick Barnes
makes it easy to root for.
He knew what he was getting into as well. I mean, he coached at Providence, but outside of that, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee. Those are all football first schools mm-hmm. that can have big time success in basketball because their fan base is so passionate about college sports. All three of those places are very similar. And you know, he got his start at Clemson and had to kind of fight kind of the way Bruce did here
for some respect.
Yeah, and then went to Texas where you have all the resources, but it's still football first. And now at Tennessee, he's kind of combined both those things. He's pulled the Tennessee program out of the gutter. And now with Philip Fulmer, Rick Barnes has everything he needs to win and win big, and they are the number one team in the country. We'll come back with more. We never did get to Lenardi's bracketology. We'll do that. Tennessee is in the bracket, that's what really doesn't matter. The number one ranking matters a lot more than these projections, but it is fun to look at if the tournament were to start today, be like, and we'll do that next. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville.
Joey Brackett.
All right.
We've only teased it twice.
Well, we had a bunch of phone calls.
Just trying to keep us on some kind of track.
865-546-8200 if you want to derail this segment. Davey, where are we, buddy? You brought it up. I'll let you have the honors.
Well, as everyone would expect, we are a number one seed.
Yes!
Mm-hmm. We're the number one seed in the Midwest region.
Back to Kansas City. Man, I just bought my Louisville tickets yesterday.
Sorry, man.
So that would have you in Columbus for the first round.
Just kidding.
But where I'm not sure on is if Lenardi has us as the number one overall seed, because right now he has Duke in the East, which would be Washington, D.C., but both the 16 seed play-in games are for Duke and Tennessee. So that's typically the top two seeds.
Get the... Yeah, winner of the play-in.
To where they already have another game where they've had to play.
That seems like he has Duke number one, just because they're close. They're staying close.
But can't you put the play-in game into any bracket? Like, that doesn't matter, right? Like, why not still put Tennessee in the South with the play-in game?
Well, he has Virginia.
Oh, no. It
in the South right now.
It may have to do with... the
aesthetics of the bracket.
Well, no, they're scared. He's not even that far into it, though. You know, they obviously have to set the Tuesday playing games for the Thursday and the Friday. You know, the Wednesday for the Friday, that type of stuff. But with this pod format, you can really make any of that work. So I don't.
You run down the rest of our bracket?
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is what makes me think that we're not the number one overall seed in his mind is because Michigan is the 2 seed in your region.
Really?
Yeah.
That
would definitely make it to where we're not number one in his mind. Number one overall.
I think what he's saying is Duke beating Virginia is enough of a resume builder to where he's saying if the selection committee had to decide right now, they would actually weight Duke ahead of Tennessee.
And I understand that. So, but what does he have Michigan as the sixth ranked team in the country? Are they the number two seed overall? You think?
No, I don't think so. I think Michigan State's the weakest one, and Gonzaga's the two in theirs. And I think he has Gonzaga's the best two.
Okay.
Now I think he has Kansas and Michigan as the next, and then Kentucky's the weakest two. He has them playing Duke in the East.
So for the Midwest region, which Tennessee would then be going to Columbus, Ohio to play its first game versus the winner of Norfolk State or Robert Morris.
Robert Morris beat Kentucky a few years back.
You would then face the winner of Nebraska and Florida State.
Ooh. Do not want to see Florida State.
I don't think I want to see either of those teams.
Yeah.
They both dropped in his most recent rankings. Mm-hmm. And at the 5 seed in that region would be Purdue, which would then play either Arizona State or Florida, whoever wins that play-in game. And Houston's the 4 seed with Liberty at the 13th seed. They just moved into the bracket.
Houston's pretty good, too.
Villanova at the 6th seed would play the winner of Minnesota and VCU. And number 3 is Virginia Tech, which they're sliding. And they would play Radford.
And then Radford.
The 7 and 10, Oklahoma and UCF. And then the 2 seed Michigan would play 15 UC Santa Barbara.
I don't like this one.
Well, that's good, because this is not what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I don't like it. I like the last one.
Not Lenardi's best work.
Not for us. Don't like it. Go back to work, Joe. Sorry. Thanks for the number one seed, though. Appreciate that.
I mean, he might have Virginia.
Thanks for the respect.
And Duke ahead of Tennessee, because he had Tennessee lower in his mind anyway.
Yeah, he did.
It might have just worked out last week for Tennessee to be in the South. But, I mean, to me, that's where Tennessee would rather be.
I want
right?
that South.
If Tennessee's the number one overall seed, they're going to be in the South.
I would think so, yeah.
Because...
And that's Columbia, Louisville?
Well, it can be anywhere to start, but it's Louisville for the regional semis and final. There are some years, depending on the East location, whereas a Tennessee fan, you'd rather be in the East. But this year in D.C., with the South being in Louisville, like sometimes the South is in like Florida somewhere.
Right.
You might rather go to D.C. than have to go to Orlando or whatever. But
no, Louisville works for me.
But Louisville is just so close.
If Atlanta's not an option, I'll take Louisville.
Yeah.
Okay. We're climbing up in the eyes of Joey B. I appreciate that.
I mean, the trick here, this is kind of like, for Tennessee, it's gonna kind of be like the NFL schedule a little bit. Like, this stuff's going to be determined by, can you take care of business in your conference? Because the ACC is the toughest conference, and those teams are going to lose. I mean, like, Duke and Virginia are going to lose more.
Yeah.
It's going to happen
at
some point. I don't know. Theoretically, it might not have to, but it seems like those teams will drop some more games. And so the trick for Tennessee is win every single game that you're expected to win and then see if you can – I mean, what you got Kentucky twice. Those will be tough. You got the surprise teams out of what we call the SEC West in football, Ole Miss and LSU –
and Mississippi State.
And Mississippi State, and you're going to have Auburn. You can't lose to anybody outside of those teams if you want to be one of the top seeds. And then if you can win almost all those games, you might have a claim to be the number one overall seed at the end of the year.
Right now, Lenardi's got 10 Big Ten teams in the tournament, 8 ACC, and 7 SEC, and 7 Big 12.
7 of the SEC is pretty good.
And Alabama's the first 4 out, so that'd give you 8.
That does help put some perspective on the Alabama game from the weekend. You know, if they're first 4 out, then you know,
right?
You played pretty poorly. You still beat a bubble team. Not that big a deal.
According to the BPI on ESPN, just a real quick little update: Tennessee is 85% or better to win their next 7 games. Yo, they have the Kentucky game at Rupp as a coin flip, 51-49. Favoring the Vols slightly. But the next 7 games in a row, Tennessee 85% or better chance to win, according to the BPI. That includes road game at Vanderbilt, West Virginia, at South Carolina, at Texas A&M, Missouri, Florida at home. And South Carolina, again, also that one's at home too.
You mentioned Vanderbilt. I know the players and Coach Barnes aren't thinking anything like this. But as far as fans, we know that the last time you got the number one ranking, you went into Vanderbilt as your first game, and you ended up losing.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling that it happened this way again. This is not that Vanderbilt team,
no,
and I think
not. This
Tennessee team is better, but it is ironic. It is a little scary just because of history. I think Memorial tomorrow night will be a nice shading of orange throughout that. I don't even know what we call it. Gym. It's a gym. It's not an arena. It's a gym. It's a theater. It's an opera. Looks like an opera house.
I do think this team is built to handle bad nights so much better than you know, a Bruce Pearl team. They just are. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
And even if you're a coach that likes Bruce Pearl's style, you would probably still agree with that. I mean,
I don't know.
When you press and shoot threes. And
I don't think anyone could argue that.
You know, I mean...
Right, that's the thing. I mean, this team, we saw it against Alabama. They have the ability to hit a different level of intensity on defense when their shots aren't falling. And after the early explosion by Petty, the shots didn't fall, but Tennessee's defense remained tenacious. And then especially there at the end, when you make a couple of really key plays and you're able to go down and hit a couple of big shots and free throws to get the win, you didn't see a lot of that from Bruce Pearl teams. In fact, close games were... Usually close games under Bruce Pearl seems like they went the opposite way. Like if Tennessee didn't run somebody early and kind of hold them off late, you didn't get a lot of close wins under Pearl. Like there were a few. I mean, it's basketball. You're going to have close games. But against good teams, not as many as when you just kind of showed up and showed out and the other team never really had a chance. I mean, obviously the Kansas game after the suspensions is one that you put the asterisk by. But, I mean, remember when they went to Texas and faced Rick Barnes in year one and they're up like 24 in the first 12 minutes? Mm-hmm. And it's like, how did this happen? You had a couple of close games against Kentucky. I remember a Memphis game up here, though, where I think Chris Lofton had 23 at the half and Memphis had 20. Like some nights you just hit your threes, you blow a team out, and you don't have a chance for a close game. This team, if they do get in that situation, I'm with you, Nate, they're better equipped to handle it and win, and they've already shown that this year. I mean, the Gonzaga win is clutch. Look at what they did against Florida. Obviously, look at what they did against Alabama, even though that one kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
What was the largest lead we had in the game against Kansas this season?
I don't know.
10, 8, something like that. They had a chance. Azubuike was out in foul trouble, and Tennessee had kind of it was a pretty big lead, and then that guard hit back-to-back threes. So he scored six just in back-to-back possessions with a zero trip for Tennessee in between. I'm assuming, I don't know, it's confusing because there's not, you know, the NCAA not super transparent with the rules and everything. We know these pods can move around to wherever they want to in the bracket. Lenardi's always had the East and West next to each other and the South and Midwest next to each other. I don't know if those can change or if those just stay the same, and obviously you can move teams around if you have to. But if the South and Midwest, I mean, hell, Tennessee's number one. We've already thrown it out there about if they win the national championship, so we might as well go all in here. If the Midwest and the South play each other in the first half of the Final Four, the national semifinals, that's a pretty favorable way to do that, I think, because it probably means you're either getting a Michigan or a Virginia if the seeds hold. And obviously, if the seeds don't hold, anything can happen. But you got to think Duke, if they don't fall apart and are a number one seed, that going to D.C. is pretty likely for them. The West doesn't really matter. There's not like a West team that just jumps off the page right now. So they'll probably send the worst, you know, Midwestern or East team and just ship them out. And so you're probably left looking at a Virginia, Kansas, Michigan type of team, Michigan State maybe, in the Final Four if the seeds hold, if you're Tennessee. And that's probably a good thing.
9 was your biggest lead against Kansas.
It's pretty good.
Just went 10,
8.
You're dancing around it.
Right there. Just all around. Yeah. So right now, Virginia is the one in the South, Duke in the East, Michigan State in the West, and Tennessee in the Midwest. If that didn't make any sense, what I'm saying is, in this scenario, Virginia would play Tennessee in half the bracket. You wouldn't face Duke or Michigan State until the national championship. If you're talking seedings hold. Of course, they never do. So
Yeah.
All this
will change.
It's just a
snapshot.
Fun to speculate.
But it is fun to play around with a little bit. We'll come back. Final segment, hour two. Stick with us right here. It's 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. This segment of the program brought to you by Knoxville Stone Interiors. Check them out online at knoxstoneinteriors.com. And then head to the showroom, 3900 Middlebrook Pike. 89. Not sure where that came from.
I don't either.
3900 Middlebrook Pike, right here in Knoxville. They're even open Saturday mornings from 9 until 2. You can go look at all the level 1 granite options they have available, quartz as well, recycled glass, any countertop you need in your home, business, they can hook you up at Knoxville's Stone Interiors. I like how ESPN ran the headline, Tennessee jumps Duke to take number 1 in AP.
No, got to mention Duke.
No, Duke lost, okay? Duke lost.
Well, we did jump them.
Well, but usually you use the phrase jump in a poll when the same things happen to both teams. Like, you don't usually say that in football if a team loses.
It's ESPN, and I'll be the first to admit there is a bias towards Duke.
They love Duke.
It's kind of like the whole LeBron thing, and they're trying to treat Zion like he is the next LeBron. So I understand what they're doing.
He's the meal ticket, man.
And people love dunks, and ESPN's really gotten away from just being able to relate to the common fan. So,
well, they do have a picture of Grant Williams on the homepage. I mean, it's below two, or sorry, I'm on the NCAA men's basketball subsection homepage, but The first one is what's real, what's fake, and who should really be number one. And it's got a picture of Zion stealing the ball from a Virginia player. The next one is Big Blue back? I've never referred to Duke as Big Blue. That's Kentucky, first of all.
Who wrote this?
Wait, and he's talking about Duke, though?
Well,
are you sure?
I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, this is not the way it looks like. It has a basketball. It's a little icon. It says, is Blue Big Blue back? Underneath, it has a picture of two Duke players, one being Zion Williamson, of course, and it says, bracketology, colon, Duke leads the field. So there's the answer to your Lenardi question, maybe. Yeah. That's Duke definitely. Then the next feature post is men's college hoops. Got a picture of Grant. It says power rankings, Tennessee tops, and maybe for a while. And then the next one is men's college hoops. It's got Admiral popping the jersey.
Yeah.
Capital One fan vote. Who's your number one? It says Tennessee is number one in
Tennessee.
The AP and coaches poll. But
me
Duke,
too.
After a big win over Virginia, is nipping on the Vols heels. Who's your pick to be number
That's
one?
That's fair. I got no problem with that. Just take care of business over the next six, seven games. People will get it. Be fine. Ain't no problem. Ain't no problem. We good? Good on that?
Yeah, we're good. Any level of worry going to Vandy?
Sure. It's an SEC road game. Those are never easy. Vanderbilt losing five straight is like the double-edged sword. It's like, oh, great, they're playing horrible. Mm. And then it's like, oh, well, maybe they're going to go backs against the wall and give it everything they got one last time. But no, I mean, Tennessee should be able to take care of business tomorrow night.
This is weird just how I rationalize this, but I do feel better knowing that, like, after such a poor second-half performance, that Rick Barnes and the guys know, like, all right, we got to come out and actually we're not just going to be able to loaf around and just blow these guys out of the gym. Like, if we would have just kind of had the same second half that you did against the first half of Alabama where everything was falling and you kind of were just in a rhythm, for some reason, I don't know, I just think that people would be like, oh, yeah, we're good to go, and that's when you kind of have the other team sneak up and beat you.
So you think they'll be laser-focused for this one, in part because of the second half at Alabama, they almost dropped that game.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's also another thing to just see teams that have the senior leadership, and really everyone who gets a lot of minutes has been in the program for multiple years and knows what to expect and kind of how to rebound from these types of performances.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, from now on, your road games will be in familiar places. You know, you're not playing in a gym you haven't played in before, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a weird, I don't know when the last time this team played like at Ole Miss or whatever. I can't remember if they played there last year or not. But for the most part, you know, there's nothing new because you're such a veteran team. You've been to Vanderbilt. You've been to Rupp. You've had success at these places. You know, obviously, they're not going to go there again, but they had been to Florida before. I think that's a key factor. You're not going to have anyone on this team stepping into a venue and being terrified because they've never played here before, and, oh, what's it like? Maybe LSU. I don't remember the last time we played at LSU. That's why that one kind of makes me nervous. But I agree with Davey. I think it's really hard to look back after the Arkansas game and say, yep, we did not play well. You won by 19. You scored 106. Hard to really buy into defense, 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 defense that week in practice when you just slaughtered someone.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a little bit easier when you almost lost to Alabama in front of a sellout crowd when they announced the coaches and Tony White was there and you had a chance to go to number one. Hopefully they realized just how close they were to missing this specific opportunity, and it motivates them, you know, to go into Vanderbilt and play 40 full minutes, not 20 great minutes and 20 minutes. I buy all of that. I think that Alabama game, Terrell tweeted this yesterday, I think that's the kind of game that really can help you build, you know, your character, your resolve, your poise, and you didn't have to lose the game to learn the lesson. I mean, that was a pretty tight last 5 minutes, right? I mean, you had to play well. You couldn't panic. You couldn't get nervous if you were Tennessee, and they didn't. They won the game. But you can look back at that game and find a lot that went wrong, a lot that you could do to play better. I think that's the ideal scenario. Win the game, learn your lesson, move on, and now put it into play.
GBO asks, where do you guys see the program in 2 years? Are we riding the Williams-Schofield wave? Hard to say yes, considering other weapons on the roster. And that the question also relates to recruiting, which is on the rise. Like, I mean, that you are riding that wave, but it should lead to better recruiting, in my opinion. I mean,
no, it already has.
I mean, that's just the way it works. It is going to be hard to replace their type of play, especially in crunch time. I mean, I feel like Admiral, I mean, the peanut butter and jelly thing is kind of apt, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like Grant is the guy that just is always does what he does. And then Admiral is the guy that when you need that extra, you know, he's been there for you, especially this year against Gonzaga. Grant fouls out. He banks in a three, hits another one. I mean,
he was an animal against Kansas late, too.
He went off last year in big games.
I mean, the back third of the schedule, he was an absolute monster.
But I do think it's not just those guys, obviously. The development of the entire roster has been so good, and you just hope that success leads to better recruiting, and then that the insane development you've been seeing and the culture that's fostered that continues.
Yeah. 2 years from now, if you're looking at this roster and where you're at now, you're not going to have anybody on it that's playing valuable minutes outside of Pons.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's college basketball.
It is.
Like, I mean, that's college sports.
And that's part
like,
of having a senior-driven team.
Yeah.
As far as the recruiting, I am interested to see if Josiah James is a one-and-done player, if he's a guy who actually wants to stay in the program for a while. Because he is a difference
maker. He's kind of said both. You know, he's kind of said, we'll see, but I also wouldn't mind having a full college experience.
So, right now, like, you don't really have anybody on the roster that would be playing guard in 2 years. So, I can't really answer that question until you get there. I mean, hopefully you can hit on the recruiting trail and continue to do what he has done as far as developing the talent that he gets, even though it's definitely a lot lower in the rankings compared to a lot of the other schools that are getting players as the one and dones go.
I do think that to continue, you're not going to be able to build an entire program long term, year in, year out, be at the top of college basketball this way. Like you're going to have to use
the momentum,
this success
to go get some
to
ballers,
recruit
yeah.
better players, and then still develop them to remain at the top. And I think that's the crux of the question there. But I do think, I mean, they'll be able to do that. They're already showing signs of that right now.
And if you only lose Admiral and Kyle after this season, I mean, you're primed to lead the SEC again next year.
Yep. I mean, right now, those are your two guaranteed heavy minute guys that you're going to lose. Like, Kyle is gone. Admiral is gone. Grant may have a decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of speculation there as far as, you know, kind of what he projects as at the next level. But, I mean, if you just look at next year, adding Josiah James with Grant Williams, Lamonte Turner, Bowden, Bone, Pons, hopefully Burns is a little bit better. I think you feel okay. Yeah. I mean,
I think Walker's going to develop.
Yeah, I think he's kind of going through the year two maybe that Admiral had, and I think next year he could be a really, really nice player for you. Zach Kent, I mean, he's 6'11". They were high on him until he had the shoulder injury. He's a guy who could come in and maybe give you some of Kyle's minutes next year as far as being at and around the rim and protecting it. I mean, 6'11", 220, at least bigger than Kyle. There's at least a chance there that he could help you.
I used to think when guys came in basketball, like, if they didn't show something pretty quickly, like, you could just almost write them off as being a star down the road. But Rick Barnes in the development
this,
year
not with this staff,
has almost
man.
Thrown that out the window.
I mean, in year two, you thought you'd lost Admiral, right? You mm-hmm. thought, oh, yeah, that's a guy who showed some flashes but just can't figure it out, and now he's up for the Wooden Award with Grant Williams.
Austin mentioned it at the call at the beginning of the hour about a five-star recruit. It's a center out of Atlanta. That guy's name is Walker Kessler. He's a 2020 recruit. He's the 15th overall player, according to 24/7, in that class. I mean, right now it looks as if Tom Crean and Georgia's going to get him, but who knows? I couldn't.
Long way to go.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go to Georgia.
I would want to go to Georgia.
Terrible idea.
Tennessee looks pretty sweet, if you ask me.
We'll come back. We'll kick off hour number three of the program's 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville.